You are guilty of listening to the news according to me. Well, yesterday's show was recorded right before the verdict came out. So it's a guilty verdict on all three counts. Second degree murder at the top of the list. Let's talk about this, because this is something very important. And when I refer to this, I'm talking about my what I'm drinking here. I have hot chocolate this morning. One of those mornings with my cinnamon Starbucks creamer inside there. So that's what's in there. It's just one of those mornings. Now, of course, all the pundits are talking. This was the big news yesterday. It's all you saw on the news all evening. Now, there were, you would think, okay, get the verdict they wanted, there wouldn't be any rioting. There actually was rioting. News isn't reporting anywhere. If the news doesn't report it, it doesn't happen, right? But yeah, there was rioting. Various places in the country, they were just looking for reasons to loot. This was a celebration riot, much like soccer games have. Ridiculous. They win, they riot. They lose, they riot. They're just, yeah. So, I want to weigh into this just a little bit. And I mostly want to focus on some of the comments around this case, because there were some absolutely ridiculous and atrocious things said. I don't even know where to begin, because but I do know where I want to end, and I want to finally land on some points that I think are important to understand where we go from here and where the nation is going at the moment. For very good reasons, and or for very bad reasons. It depends on how you look at it. First of all, let me talk about Nancy Pelosi. She came out and referred to George Floyd as having sacrificed his life for justice. I don't know that that was George Floyd's intention. Usually when someone lays their life down for someone else, they know it. They realize what's happening at the time, or they have some sense of unselfish action that they're doing. And I don't know that that was in George Floyd's heart at all. I don't know what was in his heart. I'm just saying I don't know that that was there. Now, did Nancy Pelosi and many on the left use George Floyd's death as a sacrifice to their idol, their god of power? Well, I'll just leave that to you to decide. I don't think I need to make that call this morning. Did the media use this as a means to an end? I would say I'll let you decide on that. And I'll let you guess what my opinion of that is. Well, this is going to be a little game this morning. You get to guess what my opinion is on some things. Because if I have to tell you, then you probably haven't listened to this show at all. So, and even if you haven't listened to this show at all, then just by the tone of my voice, this is a voice game. We'll see how well you do with my my voice and my tone. See if you can read what's going on. Some other statements that were made were by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who believes the system didn't work. Now, there are those saying that the system worked and justice was served. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says that the system didn't work, and I think she's referring to the broader scope of things, that basically what she's saying is it doesn't matter what the verdict was. Even though they got the verdict they should have gotten, the verdict never should have happened in the first place. I think that's what she's trying to say, but she didn't. In other words, this incident should never have happened to begin with, and we shouldn't be happy about, okay, let's go on with our lives and everything go back to the same. I think that's what she's trying to say, but I don't think she's very good at speak stuff. She's talking speaking stuff because she's not that articulate. So I don't think she can make a point and have it come across properly at this point. Because usually when she says something, it's ridiculous. And I know a lot of people look up to her. A lot of people think she's the bee's knees. And most of those people are young, you know, kids whose brains haven't developed yet. And I'll give them a pass on a little bit of that. So here's why I'm a little bit down this morning. And this is because I'm already hearing, and this is, as I had said yesterday in the show, this is, no matter what the outcome of this thing is, they're going to use this as a lever, as they've been trying to do for a long time. And this is, people don't realize where this is going. See, this is, again, you take a step back sometimes and ask yourself, where are we moving to? Not just who's driving the bus, how fast are we going, are we taking a turn here, what are we doing here? It's, what's the destination of this bus that we're all on, this vehicle? And what is the end of this agenda that we seem to be unfolding before our eyes? And I think people they just think we're improving. We're making it better. We have a higher sense of morality now. And I just want to challenge those thoughts, because the sense of this is a faux. And what I mean by that is a F-A-U-X, faux, as in faux leather, fake leather, imitation, sense of morality. It is a humanistic idea of what morality is. And it's they're trying to replace God's law. And in fact, in some ways, they even, what amazes me sometimes is how they'll even quote Jesus or think that they're, well, we know we're supposed to feed the hungry, we're supposed to do all these things. Well, that's what we're supposed to do, yes, not the government. Charity is not when someone forces you to pay something so that they can give it away and keep some of it. Charity is when you in your heart give out of your heart, out of your resources to someone else. Or when you help someone else attain or achieve resources of their own. That's even better. It's kind of like the old give a man a fish, teach a man a fish thing. One is good, the other is greater. And you make these, you know, they make these statements, and there's such a just a politicization of so many things. And when the left latches onto something, you can bet your booty it is for the purpose of political power. Now, having said that, the right has its own stuff. There are a lot of things that politicians on the right will say and do out of influence of certain voters, but the heart of that politician has nothing to do with what's being said. That does happen. People carry water for their political party a lot of times, and I see this happen especially with pundits. That when I see it happening, and I don't always see it happening, but when I see it happening, it's stomach turning, and I get tired of it. What's interesting to me though is this: when I hear, sometimes I'll have my show and I'll have my opinions and I record early, so like right now it's 7:30 in the morning, recording the show on a Wednesday morning, April something. I don't know what it is. April 21st, 22nd. I have a cat meowing in the background. And a lot of times I'll say things, and it's like later on in the day, I'm like, I'll use analogies or I'll make statements about some things, and later on in the day, I'll hear all the pundits say the same exact thing. The same thing. And it's kind of weird to me. It's almost like they stole my show notes, which I don't even have show notes. I just have a cat crawling on my sound booth. And I'm not sure what to do about that. Because I'm, in the middle of a show here. Oh, my word. I really don't, let's move on. There are a lot of people who are celebrating this morning. And some are thinking that, George Floyd, has justice been served for George Floyd? And they're celebrating that. And I understand. From what they understand and what they know, they think that justice has been served. And there are those on the other side who say that this has been a travesty of justice, that justice has not been served, that this man didn't get a fair trial. And no matter which side of the aisle you are on that particular issue, it may be time to step back a little bit and think about some of the things that are going to happen out of this, how the political sides are going to use this. Now, that's where I want to go into this this whole thing with where we go from here. What's going to the future? Now, there's a George Floyd Policing Act, I think it's called, legislation that's going forward. Now, this would have gone forward regardless of which way the verdict would have been. If the verdict would have been, if it had been acquitted, then yes. This definitely would have gone through, of course, after all the riots. Then they would have taken advantage of the chaos at that time. And that's, I think they were kind of looking forward to some chaos. Now they're really not that happy about it. Because if you recall, they used the riots before and they kind of encouraged them. And they were encouraging them, if the verdict didn't turn out the way they wanted it to, they wanted more riots as well. But now they're kind of stuck in a conundrum because he's guilty. Now they have to figure out what to do because they have to get people motivated now. But don't worry, they'll manage to do this. and they're going to push this legislation through. Now, supposedly what it does is it bans certain chokeholds and things that police can do and this and that. First of all, let me just say this. One of the outcomes I think from this is going to be that police officers are probably going to be hard to find now. When you start going after officers for making mistakes, you know, criminal prosecution for officers that make mistakes, criminal prosecution for officers that, and I'm referring to the woman who shot the man instead of tasering him, Dante Wright. And when you start to do those kinds of things, the liability, you know, it's not just a civil suit where there's money paid out. Keep in mind that the family, George Floyd's family, got $27 million. But, you know, it goes beyond the civil suits, goes into criminal prosecution, which, you know, in some cases that's warranted. If a police officer, you know, kind of flips out and goes into revenge mode, which I have seen, and this can be a very subtle thing, but I've seen it in officers when there was recently a case where there was a little bit of a belligerent individual who got pulled over. And I can't remember why he got pulled over. And they were asking him to get out of the car. He wouldn't get out of the car. He was a military guy, reservist or military kid. Young man, in his 20s, I think. Now, he was kind of well within his rights to say that he hadn't committed a crime. He kept asking him what was the crime he was. They kind of told him. They were asking him to get out of the car. One of the officers was not good at de-escalating the situation. And again, this comes back to, I've seen some very poor training in police officers. Now, granted, you know, I would not be an officer now. You couldn't pay me enough to do it. Because there's, you know, if I had my career to do over again, if I started back at my, you know, 20 years old and thought about what I was going to do, there was a time I thought about law enforcement. They were so particular back then about eyesight and some of those kinds of things. I didn't have that great eye. Believe it or not, I made it as a pilot, but I couldn't make it as a police officer. I didn't really try that hard. I mean, I didn't actually apply for anything. I just know that with all the things that they were doing, I probably would not have gotten in because they were very picky. They can't be picky anymore. And I'm not saying there's not good officers out there, and that some forces, some departments are still able to be picky because there's some areas that it's still an honored occupation. But there are places in this country now where that is beginning to erode. And they're not picking the best and brightest. They're just, if you show up with a heartbeat, and you may be a good cop, and you may not be quite so good. And they may take you anyway. Sometimes the standards have been lowered because of certain, well, just say that there's places that, there's seats that need to be filled. So, as we look at this, you know, of course, I have a cat jumping around in this rubber room here, and that's becoming increasingly difficult for me to concentrate. So, and I have to concentrate. Echo. Those of you who've ever, probably most, some of you probably never watched the movie Airplane. So you need to go watch that movie, just because that's half of my humor is based on Airplane. So we have a, which is a movie, by the way, that would never be able to be made in today's world. There's too much political incorrectness in that movie. I'm surprised it hasn't been banned already. But it's a classic. And kids today have no understanding of what humor is. So humor basically is, at its core, is when we poke fun at ourselves. We include ourselves in the poking of fun, regardless of what your race is or what your whatever. But that's not what comedy is anymore. Comedy now is social justice speech. So as we move forward from this, here's the legislation that we're looking at, this George Floyd policing act or whatever it's called, that's going through the House right now. It's not the only one, but this is the main one. It's got his label on it. The one who made his sacrifice. The one they sacrificed to their idol. In my opinion. To the temple of democracy. I just heard this morning. This is by, I think it was Martin Luther King Jr. III. You know, he was happy about the outcome, but he said, we're just getting started. Now, you have to understand the term civil rights is being redefined. I've also heard a commentator, anchor of some kind, this morning basically said, some sort of a pundit was being interviewed, said something to the effect of, the term civil rights means unrest, and civil rights means disruption and unrest. With all the things that Maxine Waters said in her little speech the night before the verdict, threatening basically for, and of course then Joe Biden comes out while they were deliberating, comes out and says, you know, the evidence is overwhelming and it should be a guilty verdict. No president has ever done that before, weighing in on an outcome prior to the outcome. Of course, his excuse was, well, they're being sequestered now. They won't hear that. And of course, Jen Psaki, she says, you didn't hear what you heard. And she said this about several people. She just comes out and says, well, that's not what they said. That's not what they meant. What you hear is not what you hear. There's no ballot boxes under these tables. The droids are looking for, these are not the droids are looking for. And they get away with this. It's raining. Why is my leg wet? Yeah. So we continue to go down this road. Now here's, So let's take a step back and ask where this is leading. Where are we going with this? And why are they using this in such a manner? And at what point will this be over? Will it just mean every time a cop arrests a black man that there's criminal charges going to be filed? All the way up to the ceiling. Nutty cat. So, is that where we're leading to now? We're leading to a point where cops have to be on their guard all the time. They have to depend on their lawyers. They have to depend on their errors on emissions insurance. it's getting to the point where their hands are so tied they won't want to pull anybody over, unless you're a straight white man that's gone a mile an hour over the speed limit. Because you're the only one they can, you know, take out their frustrations on. No. So again, where is this going? What is it leading to? And I'm again going to contend that we are headed for a federalized system of law enforcement. You know, whether it happens this year or whether it happens in 5 years, we are heading for a federalized, centralized law enforcement agency, like the TSA or the whatever it's going to be. It will not be the FBI. And the way I think we're probably going to see this happen, this is just my theory, is somehow, much like election law, which should be state by state. Now they're trying to incur, you know, H.R. 1 is this legal system in which they're trying to centralize voting laws to ban certain things from being able to be done, like voter ID, trying to make that illegal. Mandatory mail-in ballots to every single person on the planet. Just different things like that. They're trying to do that from a centralized position. Because, you know, the people in D.C. know what's best for all of us out here in our counties and in our states. And eventually, this is the same thing they're trying to do with, they're going to federalize the law enforcement officers. And here's how I think this is going to happen. Everyone from city, county, state law enforcement is going to have to be certified probably by a federal agency, an oversight agency of some sort that will introduce universal standards to all law enforcement. Now, there is a little bit of this right now. There are some standards, federal standards that go with it. Now, but this is going to be a different thing. This is going to be jurisdiction over not just the police department. This is where it's heading. You're going to have, not first of all, this agency will probably have authority over law enforcement and the way they train, the things that they do, things that they're allowed to do and not do, they have to do. And of course, it'll be a woke enforcement agency with, you know, political correctness being at the top of the list of things that they need to accomplish. Social justice issues will be their main focus. And in the midst of all of this, and of course, certain standards will have to be abide by certain standards, have to have a certain quota of females, different ethnic groups. This afternoon's show, by the way, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get into a discussion. I'm going to try to jot some notes down actually for this afternoon's show and talk a little bit about the cultural issues that we have in our country. Not just I don't see the racial issue as a black and white issue. In other words, and I'm talking about people of color versus Anglo-Saxon or white, you know, white-skinned people versus brown, black people, skinned, colored people. I don't know. I don't see it that way. What I see is that we have a cultural battle, and I want to talk about that a little bit more this afternoon. And it goes much deeper than the color of a person's skin. Now, yeah, I'll talk about it more this afternoon. Now, let's go back to what I was talking about. The federalized police department, the police thing, will start very innocuously by saying we're going to have rules and regulations for state county and local law enforcement. And that standardization and that oversight group will begin to encroach more and more power. At some point, of course, now they'll have to be certified in their police department, you know, books and everything will be certified by the feds as having been approved, regardless of whether you're an inner city, you know, Chicago, New York, wherever you are, or out here in the suburbs. Now AOC believes that there's over-policing, and I heard this from several people today, there's over-policing in some inner cities. Tell that to people who live in inner cities and trying to raise their families, where there's shootings every day. Every day. Tell it to them. Tell them there's over-policing. They're the ones who are saying, no, we don't need to defund the police. We need more police. It's ironic that they're going there. There's over-policing in the inner cities, in the high crime areas. Okay, let's just give them that for a second. And let's take that to its logical conclusion then. When AOC says that what would it look like if we defunded the police, the suburbs, that was her answer, was the suburbs. So in other words, the reason that we don't have high crime rates and gang violence and that kind of thing here in out here in the country, out here in Cornville, is because we don't have police here. That's why we look like the suburbs. Well, we are the suburbs. So the problem is the police. The problem isn't the crime rate or the cultural, because the crime rate, you know, only goes up because the police are there, apparently. Take the police away and the crime rate goes away. Well, because crime happens and nobody reports it. Because who are you going to report it to? There's no police to report it. This is their answer for everything. And I'd like to know why we had, all of a sudden, we went from right near the end of Trump's administration, we went from like 200-some thousand people who had died from COVID to 500,000 just like overnight. It seemed like it just happened all at once. The night before the election, you know, or before the inauguration, Biden gets up and does some kind of a ceremony. Now, keep in mind, he's the president-elect. He's not the president yet. And he's out there doing some kind of ceremony in honor of the 400,000 people who've passed from COVID. It wasn't a couple weeks later, we had 500,000 people that died. Now, all of a sudden, it's almost 100 days later, and they're saying 550,000 people. That's a ridiculous drop, all of a sudden, in the rate. We don't know the real numbers on this. It just aggravates the daylights out of me, because I think the numbers have been played with and messed with so much that we don't even know the truth on that. And I've got some good news about that, by the way. Near the end of this program, you can listen to me then about that. Just a quick blurb about some good positive news for those of you who have faith. However, here we have this federalized thing is going to creep in. It may be a slap down very quickly happen, but I think it would have happened that way had George Floyd's had this whole trial thing with Chauvin. Now, there are two other officers who I believe are also up on charges, maybe three. I think there's two other officers that are up on charges in this event. So we'll see what happens to them. Now, I don't think they are going to be held as accountable because it was, you know, Chauvin's knee that was on the back of this individual. And everybody says it was on his neck. That's very questionable, actually. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the jury. I don't know. I'm going to, you know, Did the system work? Yes, absolutely. Mechanically, everything worked. The trial was started, done, and ended. And there was a verdict. Whether or not it was a fair trial is, in my opinion, still up for grabs. There are a lot of questions I have about the process of the trial, the processing of the evidence, the processing of the selection of juries, of the jury. Major, major questions there. Why the trial was held in county, not, you know, taken out of county, and the excuses and reasons for that not happening. The jury that was selected, how honest were they in their answers? I mean, I've seen trials where high-profile trials, the jurors go in with an intent. They want to get on that jury because they want to find this guy guilty. Can you find an uninfluenced jury in this situation? And of course, the jury wasn't sequestered during this whole time. So they're listening to the news. They're listening to all the stuff going on. They feel intimidated, maybe. Or maybe they just had an agenda already. Supercharged, high-profile case that didn't just hear the evidence. They very well likely may have had a bias. But we don't know right now. We don't know that. We will know eventually. I believe that we will, but that's for later on. The federalized force that they're going to propose and work their way into. This is a direction they have to go, and this is a direction that many other Marxists, collectivists. I'm going to call them collectivists because that's if people get real bent up on. Well, that's not Marxism. That's communism, or that's. Not communism, that's socialism, that's the different, all the different, you know, that's Leninism, whatever. It's all collectivism, okay? Collectivism is collectivism, and it's all dangerous. And I think we just need to generalize the term so that people don't get caught up on minutiae of definitions. Collectivism needs to have centralized power. The rulers in a collectivist society, when it is a humanist-motivated organization, has to have centralized power. Within that centralized power, this is why our government is not centralized. That's why the founders started off with state and local government being the most important part of your daily life. And now it's becoming more important that the federal government, Which just ceases to amaze me that the people who I know that are on the left, they say, "Well, why are you so afraid of government?" It troubles me that you're so opposed to government. And of course, then somebody like Donald Trump gets in, and they're all scared of government. That's why this is not that I was afraid of Donald Trump, but the reason I don't like centralized government is because somebody like that, a despot, gets in there. Well, like they called him a despot. They don't even know what a despot is. They called him a ruler, a Nazi, white supremacist, racist, who made it into power. Now think about it. If he had ultimate power, if he was the king, if he had all this, the power that they want their leader to have, because they do want a king, because they, the people who are, you know, I call them the godless ones. They would be offended by that because they believe they have a God. I believe they do too. I just don't believe the God they have is same God that's created the earth. They get all bent out of shape because you don't like the idea of centralized overreaching government. Until somebody they don't like gets into that government, and then they have a problem with that. It's like someone else is on the throne of our democracy. Our temple of democracy has been dethroned. Can't have that. Then So this the centralized agency that will oversee and overrun our law enforcement officers. Here's what they have to do. You see, when you have law enforcement officers, and there's a lot of precincts, a lot of organizations, a lot of departments, whether it's county or city, they have a requirement. Many of them have a requirement that you have to live, if you're a city cop, you have to live within the city limits or within a certain distance from the city limits. Counties, you have to live in the same county. You don't see cops commuting an hour to work, typically. Let's just put it that way. Driving from one state to another to work in another state. You can't live in Indiana and work as a state cop in Michigan, I don't believe. Maybe you can, I don't know. But I think it's frowned upon. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is because you're a county employee or they want you living in that county. But the main reason is because your family is there. Your friends and your family, the people you grew up with, the people you live with, are in that community. They want you from that community. There's a reason for that, a couple different reasons. And one main reason is because if you are asked to shoot upon your own community, you probably will not do that. These are your friends and your family. You're going to try to work things out. You need to know them. If you are in one county and you're working as an officer in another county where you don't know anybody, it's more impersonal. You're less likely to have a relationship with anybody in that community that you would care about. So it's an important factor, I think, involved in, just like the military. The military is made up of people from all over the country, and if the military were asked to fire on their own people, well, some of those people are your people. In other words, your family. You going to do that? It happened during the Civil War. There were families that were torn apart by the Civil War. There were people on both sides of the line in some battles. Brothers fighting against brothers. It happens. But the thing about the federalized system is that they could shuffle people around. We're going to take all these agents from Indiana, and we're going to move them over here to Utah. Take these folks from Utah, we're going to move them into Michigan. And we can kind of keep that divide going, up to the us against them mentality. That's kind of what happens there sometimes. I'm not saying it will, but saying it can. But in the meantime, they're gonna encroach this thing upon our law enforcement. And here's how I see it happening. And here's the ultimate goal is for the federal law enforcement agency to have jurisdiction, not just over the police officers, but over the communities. And we will probably see the end of local ordinances at some point. I think that local ordinances will probably always be there, but for the most part, things like code enforcement, those will always be there. Building codes, all those kinds of things. Those might even become federalized, federal standards on all that stuff. But local codes, they can vary from one city to another. However, the law enforcement part of it, I believe, will become more and more centralized to the point where city law enforcement, you won't see a difference between city police officers and county police officers, state police officers. It is just going to be one budgetary fund that everybody pays into, and these officers can go wherever they want to and enforce. Everything will be federal law. basically, at that point. They're going to federalize the entire system. And with the exception of some local laws and ordinances, probably. There'll be some modicum of, or remnant of, localized law. But that's about it. And this is where we're headed. What's the problem with that, you say? And then they're going to dress this up and tie it in a bow and make it look like nice and pretty as well. But what's the problem with that, you might say? The problem is somebody in Washington's deciding now what's best for the community here in Littleburg. And that can get very dangerous for Littleburg. So, especially when you have a tyrannical style takeover like we've had here recently, with an agenda that has nothing to do with individual liberties and rights, has everything to do with collective rights, collective justice, collective mob rule, and again, we have a Supreme Court that doesn't seem to realize the ramifications of this whole thing of adding four judges to the court. We're going to have 13. Why four? Why do they need four? Well, do the math. If they added two, wouldn't give them enough. They need to add four so that they have a major majority in the court. And then they can start legislating from the court. Because I've said enough. My cat wore me out this morning, I have to admit. I had to end up locking him out of the basement. I'm at my house, which is why the cat is doing what it's doing. Let me just give you this as a final note, because I think that there's something that's very important, and I think that this is why I'm, in some ways, it's troubling, and in other ways, it's comforting, and yet it causes me to tremble sometimes, because I don't exclude myself from this. There's coming a day when we will all stand before our Creator. And everything will be revealed. Everything that was said in the closet will be shouted from the rooftop. Everything that was said in secret will be exposed. Here's what I believe about, I'm going to say, one of the judgment days. And this is just my opinion. This is just how I kind of see things. Now, there are those who would say this isn't going to be that way at all. But I have some reasons for believing this. Some things that Yeshua said, as well as some things that are in Scripture, in the Torah. I believe that when we stand before God and others see us, I believe that everything about our entire lives, our entire life, all the decisions we've made, every second of every day of our lives will be visible. Everything we've ever done, everything we've ever said, every idle word, every thought we've had will all be visible to everyone. realize that in this entire time, everything that we've thought we were hiding inside hasn't been hidden at all. That the transparency that we portrayed here on this earth and thought we were, you know, getting things we were getting away with, it's not that way at all. It will be there for the entire, every human being who's ever lived and whoever will live will be able to see into our lives like that. The portrait of every day of our life. Now, but you say, oh, but those things are going to be wiped away. They're not going to be there. It's true. If you have accepted and received the sacrifice that was made on the cross, the blood that was shed, all those things will be covered. And the fact that all those things are covered is what brings glory to the righteousness of his sacrifice. The depths of depravity, the depths of all the things that you see, because it's not based on how good you are. Your salvation is not based on how good you are. Your salvation is based on how good he is and what he did for you. Because he's the one who gets the glory for that. It's not going to be any glory for your goodness. Because it's not about us. It's about him. And there's one scripture I think that kind of sums it up. And I just remember it has the word imputeth in it, which is why I remember it. Because that's quite a word. We don't use words like imputeth anymore. Let me see if I can find it so I can read it, because it's probably important enough that I do that. I can't spell it. Let's see if it's here. Pretty sure it was. Here we go. Yeah, let's go with this. Imputed righteousness is a concept in Christian theology. Righteousness of Christ is imputed to believers. I got to read a lot to get to where I need to go with that. Is righteousness imputed or infused? Oh my word. Someplace Paul writes about this, Rabbi Shaul. He writes about this someplace. I'll find it somewhere. I'll continue to talk until I find it here. I'm going to keep talking. Like I can keep talking. Imputeth. I think it's ETH. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. This is all, you know, is it imputed or is it something else? Is it imputed righteousness? Is it? Yeah, okay, whatever. Basically, what it's talking about is all the sins that we have committed are imputed unto us as righteousness. And this is where this, I think that verse confuses a lot of people because it's the way it's written in Greek and the way it's translated into English and the understanding we have in the context of what Paul was saying there. And basically what it amounts to is, this isn't saying we should sin so that grace may abound more. I'm not saying that at all. But the fact that our lives, in all of their depravity, we're going to see revealed how truly righteous God is in his salvation of our humble estate, you might say, our depravity. Because, and Paul even said it, our righteousness is as filthy rags. It's our best day, our best goodness of good days is still, to say that it falls short is an understatement. When you realize the ominous holiness of God, which I don't even believe we can realize on this side of the line. This is what causes me to tremble, because I realize I'm a part of this. I will stand before God and everything's going to be revealed as well. But I believe that everything, all the deception that has been done to mislead a nation of people. Now, granted, there is forgiveness. There is grace. There is mercy. If those people turn from their ways, but they won't. They're not well. I'm not going to say they won't. But they are so locked up in their own self-righteousness, their own mission that they think they are doing for God. When in reality, their God is themselves. There are some scriptures that kind of terrify me sometimes. One of them is in the Old Testament. It says, they worship me in the imagination of their hearts. This is God speaking to someone about his people. In the imagination of their hearts, they have worshiped me. In other words, they aren't worshiping me. They're worshiping a God of their imagination. It's all in their head. And there's another one that says, in fact, Jesus said it when he's talking about a parable, as he prayed unto himself, I thank my God that I am not like this other man. Praying unto yourself. And I hear this quite often. As people pray, sometimes they'll pray and it's like, who are you talking to? Because you're not standing before a holy God talking like that. So I say all that around this. That there will be an exposing of all this. And the truth will come out. And we will all know, all together, we will know what the truth of God is, what the truth of life is, and who the truth is. And just exactly where we stand in all this stuff. Whether or not we were standing on him and his truth, or if we were just picking sides because we were our own self-righteousness was in the midst of it. So I take comfort in that, knowing that at some point there is an authority that will speak and have the final word, and it will be correct. No arguing. No talk back. No more rioting. No more rebellion. Well, there will be some, but, it won't last long. And it will be over and at peace, because the truth is settled once and for all. And I'm looking forward to that. So there you go. That's the hope we have. And I'm sorry it's not, possibly not coming on this earth for a while. Maybe. We may be looking at the last round around there could be another revival. And I believe there will be a revival in the midst of some of the turmoil that's going to happen. But I think that we're looking at the birth pangs of the turmoil. So there will also be a revival. But I think it will be a revival among the remnant and not a revival among the world as we see it, not the world leadership anyway. So having said that, this is my opinion, and I could be very wrong. And hopefully I am, because hopefully we're going to have a major revival and God's law will prevail again. We will live under the blessings of living in the Spirit and be ruled once again in our hearts by the King, who is really a King. So anyway, this afternoon's show, we're going to talk a little bit more about the culture wars, the ethnic differences, and what that all means and how it all pans out and how politicians like to use it and what the news likes to do to use that kind of stuff. So once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for passing this on to other people. We'll talk to you this afternoon. Have a great day.